With the Olympics winding up this weekend, we'll all have our specific memories. Maybe it's prompted some bigger reflections about the nature of winning, of defeat, of capacity for tension, of resilience. And it might have prompted you to think way beyond sport. The Queensland swimmer Kate Campbell's experience was particularly demanding, I thought. She performed very well in group swimming, like the relays, but vastly undershot her own known talent levels in the individual races. I doubt I was alone in pondering not so much what went wrong, but more what broader lessons can be learned for our competitors, yes, in future competitions, but also about many of us being tested at work. She seems to be a particularly self-aware young woman. Listen to the specific words she used in an interview with the online journal New Daily this week. "I'm a little upset that I let some people down, but more than anything else, I just can't forgive myself yet for those 60 seconds. I find when I'm swimming for other people and with another group of girls, and I know I can rely on them and I know they're going to rely on me, I find that a liberating experience." She went on a bit more, but I think that's enough to prompt a lot of thought. It's exactly what Gaylene Clues spends her time doing. She's known the very highs and lows of elite sport, I think, as a champion triathlete. Then she turned to performance psychology, and now she's the author of a very well-regarded book, which I'll tell you about later. Welcome now to Saturday Extra.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
Gaylene, those quite specific words quite struck me. That whole notion of the group versus the individual as a motivator. Did that ring true to you?
Oh, absolutely. It's something they actually write about in my book, Wired to Pay and Play, and they're very good reasons as to why that actually occurs. So if you to unpack, you know, Kate's story a bit more, some athletes in really, really wanting to do well, I call it, you know, caring too much rather than choking, can start ruminating and worrying about, you know, maybe disappointing others or letting people down. And that kicks in their adrenaline over time. And the byproduct of adrenaline is cortisol, which tenses and tightens muscles. So in Kate's example, she was a bit slow getting off the blocks, and then she sort of went into adrenaline overdrive and was trying to make up that distance in the first 50 metres and then, of course, tired towards the end of the 100. But when you actually look at the team performance scenario, there's another wonderful thing that actually kicks in, and that's the love chemical oxytocin. And what we know is that oxytocin can dampen or moderate the release of cortisol. So when you're in a team performance scenario, you've got that sort of elevated lift, and it actually can help you perform better. The best example I can give you to try and illustrate this is that as a mother, if you are at home on your own at night and someone broke into the house, adrenaline would kick in and you would look for somewhere to hide. If you're a mother and your small children are in that house with you and someone breaks into the house, you're more likely to stand up and say to the intruder, "Get away from my children, get out of my house." And it's oxytocin that enables us to do that. So when we're competing in team performances and we compete for one another, there's this extra strength or extra lift that we actually experience as an individual.
And but I think you also provide advice to teams, don't you? Particularly when people are starting to get them spinning their wheels, as I think she called it, with an anxiety in the early hours of the morning, and she just couldn't get out of it. She couldn't relax. Now, can you apply what you've just said to real life?
Oh, absolutely. So in the team sports scenario, it's a little easier. So when you have an athlete who's not performing at their best in a team sports scenario, you get them to stop thinking about their own performance, and they become very internal when they do that. You get them to become external, to look around them, see where their teammates are, who can I help, where do I need to be now? And when we actually look at helping and backing up and supporting others, we actually build ourselves back into our own game or back into our own performance. So we can do that thing in the relay, of course, in swimming as well. When we're sharing the load and we're doing it for one another and not just for ourselves, we're actually sort of neurochemically in the right sort of headspace.
So you could actually by the sound of it, you know that just you can re-divert an athlete, and I'm thinking of a worker, to others as a means of being quite self-focused in a sort of a curious way.
Well, it's kind of ironic because sometimes we think we have to push and push and push people and keep them in this adrenaline burning state all the time, and we do that in the workplace environment. environment. And all that leads to is people becoming highly anxious and burnt out. Whereas in reality, if you actually have a good leader knows how to build a community around them. And when you're actually supporting, backing up, working with each other, collaborating, cooperating, you're going to have a much better working environment. You won't burn people out and you'll end up ultimately with better performances.
I mean, your book has been described as an attempt to demystify perceptions of mental toughness. And I suppose I sense that this is applicable far beyond sport. And it also cuts across, does it not, the whole emphasis on individualism and strive for excellence in a curious way?
Oh, absolutely. I wrote it specifically for the sporting community because I felt that the community actually needed to have this information with this greater insight, but it's totally applicable to anyone in any sort of scenario in the workplace or just in life in general. And it really is about understanding the importance of that community and that connectedness and that we thrive on that. And we've needed to thrive on that, you know, through centuries just to survive as a species. And we're sort of moving away from that. We're becoming too self-focused. And I think some of our modern technology with selfies and the way we're going in terms of social networking is actually exacerbating or increasing this focus on self. And what we really need to not lose sight of is how important the other person is, how important the community is to our well-being.
Actually, you devote quite a lot of energy to analysing the impact of technology, and you discuss a sort of risk-reward transaction that I thought was quite fresh. Let me read something you've written and I might ask you to expand. Over the years, we have evolved to be physically active and over thousands of years, and physically active and mentally calm. Now technology is gradually inverting this. Technology is making us physically inactive and mentally frenetic, and eventually this is going to make us sick. Tell us more.
Well, what happens is that we're actually totally changing our neurochemistry. So where we should be producing a lot of serotonin and dopamine and oxytocin, which puts us in a healthy neurochemical space, by becoming mentally frenetic, we're producing adrenaline and cortisol over time. And when we have too much cortisol in the system, we become unwell. We suffer symptoms such as anxiety. When we adrenaline burn for long periods of time, we also then deplete our really important neurochemicals that are actually important for mental health and well-being. And when they become depleted, we can end up experiencing depression. So we can be flipping between being adrenaline burning and anxious or depleted and depressed. And that's social media and our interaction with technology and our mental busyness, where we're not actually having enough mental downtime, enough just quiet time to refuel mentally. It's a bit like revving the engine of a car. Mm. If you keep revving it, you'll burn through the fuel and you'll end up with an empty tank.
And you say that our neuropsychology is linked, has been linked, you know, right down through the ages to movement. But that what, and if, I suppose what I got from you was you didn't have to be an athlete like yourself to prioritise that over the business of inactivity. I mean, how much do you find people are working, are pushing back against that now?
And that's very concerning because we do need to move in order to feel well. And what's happened through evolution is that we're rewarded for movement. We needed to move to hunt, to gather, to migrate with the seasons, to protect ourselves and others from predators. And so what the brain's done then is it actually gives us a lot of these feel-good neurochemicals when we engage in physical exercise and movement, because evolution has wanted us to move in order to survive through the centuries. So a lot of people think about sport and exercise as being linked to diabetes and obesity, but it is so intimately linked to mental health and well-being, and we're not actually understanding and getting that message.
So how do you think people could reframe, if they're listening to you now and thinking, gee, that makes sense, how realistically can you live in the modern world and reframe yourself?
Well, there's probably a couple of things that are important to do. And you're really right, Geraldine. You don't have to be an elite athlete to get that benefit from exercise. I mean, I do a lot of walking these days because my body's a bit broken up from a lot of sport in my youth. So even walking is a very powerful improver in terms of mental health and well-being. So we need to keep physically active, and we really need to start to understand how we regulate and manage the use of our technology. We need to actually try and look at switching off, connecting with other people. I call it having green space time outside in nature. We need to be aware of the impact that light from computer screens interferes with the production of melatonin and interferes with our sleep-wake cycles. So we need to switch off a good hour before we go to sleep in the evenings. There's management that we need to do. We need to help our young children manage it, because some of them are developing addictions to their technology, and parents are finding it increasingly concerning because they've got very emotionally dysregulated teenagers. So as a society, we need to understand the role that technology plays and use it wisely, and we need to also understand that we need to keep moving. We need to actually look to sport and exercise for well-being.
And I mean, finally, you've got this great line: if you are an enthusiastic spectator, it's time to think about reframing the language used to comment on less than hoped for athletic performances. I invite you to have a more compassionate view.
Absolutely. I think that it's very concerning when we think athletes that have placed in the top 10 of the world. I mean, imagine if we were the top 10 in the world in our professions, how highly regarded we would be. And yet these individuals are kind of being presented as if they have failed in some way because they haven't got to the number one position. We've got very interesting expectations on our athletes in this country.
Yes, you want people to pull back their perceived expectations. I noticed today there's remarks again in the New Daily that Kate Campbell has also probably lost a lot of money in terms of potential sponsorship by this sense of herself that she just, you know, almost she paralysed herself to an extent.
Kate is a very interesting young lady because she actually has a lot of self-awareness and capacity to reflect. And they're really important life skills because that means going forward she can adapt. And in fact, they're life skills, if we could teach them to all of our children, that we'll all come up against challenges and things that are difficult. We need to then sit back, analyse, reflect, and then adapt. And it's the capacity to adapt, to have a flexible mindset that actually not only keeps us well, but keeps us on a path towards ultimately achieving.
Gaylene Clues, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Thank you.
And Gaylene Clues' book is Wired to Play. It's published by ZebraMad. ZebraMad, yes, ZebraMad. And you can let us know whether that rang true for you. I thought there was a lot there that went far beyond sport. And, of course, the big closing ceremony today and the big 100 metres relay with Usain, which will be quite something to watch.